This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The polar vortex is upon us. Michigan's finally getting some true winter weather. Along with the bitter cold, we also get some amazing ice formations, even ice volcanoes on the Great Lakes. However, many a Michigander may not realize just how dangerous that Great Lakes ice is. Joining us now is Dave Benjamin, Executive Director for the Chicago-based Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project. Dave, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate being here.
So for those who are unaware, what is the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project?
The Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project is a nonprofit 501c3 charitable organization. We have five key areas of operation. We track the drownings in the Great Lakes. We teach Great Lakes water safety. We work with family and friends of drowning victims. We also provide open water surf lifeguard in-service training and first responder water rescue, water resuscitation in-service training. And then we also are a public relations and media relations water safety campaign. So we do a lot of, you know, newspaper, radio, TV interviews with water safety messages before incidents happen and unfortunately responding to incidents that do happen.
Knowing how much people have been trying to go outside in the absence of other kinds of recreational activities, I'm almost afraid to ask, but how are the numbers for 2020 or the most recent period that you would track for Great Lakes drownings?
2020 was the deadliest year on Lake Michigan since the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project began tracking the drownings back in 2010. Overall for the Great Lakes, it wasn't the worst year, but it wasn't far behind. So in 2020, there were 109 Great Lakes drownings. 56 of those were in Lake Michigan. Overall, since 2010, there have been 948 Great Lakes drownings. You know, it was a bad year for Lake Michigan. We had a lot of late season drownings, you know, leading into Labor Day weekend. A lot of wavy conditions and a lot of people, you know, wanting to get out and go to the beaches. And unfortunately, a lot of beaches don't have lifeguards like they should.
Right. It's worth noting that drownings aren't just a summertime thing, though. And it does feel almost irresistible to get out right now as things are getting really cold and see the ice. And of course, people may be tempted to test it out. Why is it that Great Lakes ice is different than what we may encounter on the inland lakes?
What we have is a gradual buildup of shelf ice on the shoreline. So the lake will freeze over, or at least like the water along the shoreline may freeze over. Then we get wind and waves that'll break it up and wash it up onto the shore. And as that water washes up, it kind of like builds up in layers, almost like in waves. And what can happen is we have moving water under this ice formation, and also the way it's forming, you know, gradually with the spraying of the waves and building up. When you go to the beach, you might not know where the beach ends and the water begins. So you might think that you're in a safe spot, that you're just kind of walking on snow, thinking you're on the shoreline, but you could be on a beach mound or an ice mound that if you were to fall through, you could possibly be in like 4 or 5 feet of water, but it may be a couple feet above your head where the ice mound was. So like you're in a cavern and there's no way to really climb out because it's an ice wall. It's wet. It's slick. There's nothing to grip onto. So if somebody doesn't see you climb that hill and fall through the peak of it, you know, the only thing, you know, you can do is yell for help. And it might not be easy for someone to hear you or to figure out where you are. And then you're putting others in danger trying to find you. So it's just, it's an overall bad situation. We recommend that if you want to go to the beach and look at the beautiful ice formations, do it at a distance. Those you know, mountains of ice that you may think are like snowdrifts, at the peaks during wave activity, water could be pushing up through those peaks. We call it an ice volcano because the waves hit the outer shoreline of the ice and drives the water through and it pops up. But when those waves calm down, that peak might freeze over and it's just a thin layer of ice that's freezing over. So it's easy, someone could easily fall into this cavern that they're just going to be trapped in.
I confess, I grew up closer to Lake Erie, and I was not even aware of ice volcanoes until I came to Michigan. How common are they on like Lake Superior and Lake Michigan?
It happens on every beach where the shoreline will freeze over. So far this year, we've kind of had a late freeze to the Lake Michigan shoreline. So it's kind of like fresh ice, could be very unstable. And already there was one man in northern Michigan on January 21st who was ice fishing. Some of the ice flow separated from the shoreline. He had an ATV. Unfortunately, he went in the water and drowned. And then just yesterday or the day before, 66 fishermen were rescued up in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, where three separate ice formations separated from the beach, the shoreline. So they had to be rescued by helicopter. So it's just, it's a lot of hazards with ice. No ice is safe ice. And about a week or so ago, there was a man who was walking on the shelf ice in Chicago and he fell through. Luckily, he only was in about waist deep of water and he was able to climb out because the ice shelf hadn't built that high yet. But I mean, he said he had no idea that, you know, he was walking over water. He thought he was walking, you know, on sand. He thought he was on the beach.
Dave, when you're out on the ice, say for ice fishing, I mean, is it enough if you've got an auger and you drill down? Like, is that enough to know whether the ice that you're on is not going to separate and float you out?
You know, it's kind of a conundrum. I'm not really fluent with ice fishing. I haven't done a lot of ice fishing in my lifetime. There are charts that, you know, recommend like a certain thickness for, you know, say ice fishing or having your ATV or even your truck out on the ice. But the way it works is, okay, you know, can you look at the ice and really tell how thick it is? The only way you could tell how thick it is by standing on it and drilling through it. And then what if it's not thick enough and then you go through? I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, the only way to test it is by, you know, putting yourself at risk.
Right.
And I'm sure like some ice fishermen would probably argue with me that they've been, you know, fishing the majority of their lives in there, you know, well-versed and what's safe and what's not, which, you know, I would take their experience over, you know, because I don't have a lot of experience with ice fishing. So I just want to be, you know, disclaimer there.
Sure. Well, okay. We know what to do if, you know, if there's a fire, people tell you stop, drop, and roll. Is there any kind of procedure if, God forbid, somebody does fall through the ice?
What we advocate is if you're ever struggling in any body of water, is that you flip, float, and follow. So flip over on your back and float. Float to keep your head above water. Calm yourself down from the fear and panic of drowning and conserve your energy. And then follow a safe path out of the water. With ice falling into cold water submersion, there's the 110-1 rule of hypothermia, which means if you have sudden immersion in cold water, you have 1 minute to control your breathing because the cold water shock is going to cause a hyperventilation gas reflex. You're just going to start hyperventilating. So you have to stay at the surface and continue breathing for at least a minute to get your breathing under control. Once you do that, if you can turn around to the path that you came in on while you're in the water, get your arms up on the ice while you're getting your breathing under control, your arms may freeze, may kind of hold you in position. Once you get your breathing under control, start kicking your feet up behind you so it brings your body up level to the surface, and then try crawling forward. And then once you get your body fully out, either continue crawling or possibly roll in the direction that you came in, and then, you know, get out of the water. And you gotta dry up pretty quick and get some warmth. You don't want the hypothermia could still set in even after you get out of the water within an hour.
So if I were to see somebody, you know, if we're to see somebody falling through the ice, what do you recommend?
Call 911. You definitely want backup emergency services coming immediately. Try to communicate with the person to hang on, try to, you know, calm their fear and possibly give them some directions. We don't recommend going out on the ice to try to help them because if they fell through, two people, you know, one person trying to help another can likely fall through as well. If you're a water enthusiast, ice fisherman, you should have equipment like life jackets. You should be wearing them, even, you know, when you're ice fishing, having a throw rope or other devices that you could reach something that floats to a person or throw something that floats to a person to provide them some flotation and possibly pull them out from a safe distance.
Is there anything you've noticed about where ice accidents and drownings, you know, where they tend to happen? Are they more common close to the cities where people maybe have less outdoor experience, or are they more likely to happen in our rural or suburban and exurban areas?
It's kind of all over the place. It seems like every year we're going to see a few ice fishermen get in trouble, whether it's the ice flow separating from the shoreline and they're having to be rescued, or snowmobilers. They may be, you know, traveling through an area where they don't realize that they're on the lake, or they've assumed that the lake is frozen over enough that they'll be able to, you know, make it across. But we do definitely see several ice fishermen incidents a year, as well as snowmobiles going through. You know, on the shorelines, sometimes people getting too close to the shoreline, not knowing it, that they may slip and fall in. In Chicago, there's, you know, bike paths and the ice formations along the beaches. You know, some people may walk to the edge and it's like a 4-foot drop into the water. You know, even if you're, you know, knee high, waist high in the water, a 4-foot ice wall is not going to be, you know, easy to climb out of, if at all. You're going to need professional rescue to arrive.
To your point about beaches without lifeguards, the beaches that do have lifeguards, what time of year do they generally start thinking about the crowds that'll be flocking there next summer?
Right now is the time of year when beaches that do have lifeguards start recruiting for lifeguards. So if anyone's interested in becoming an open water surf lifeguard in the beaches in Michigan or Indiana or Illinois, you know, now's the time to start sending out those resumes and, you know, start your own training, start swimming in the pools if pool access is available. With open water surf lifeguards, a lot of running and swimming is part of the job. You need to be an athlete.
Right.
So I know that New Buffalo, Bethany Beach in Sawyer, Michigan, and St. Joseph, Michigan are all in the process right now of recruiting and hiring lifeguards. And South Haven, Michigan is investigating, you know, researching the option of bringing back lifeguards to their beach. We need more lifeguards at our beaches. They are the gold standard of protecting the public when they visit beach communities.
Well, thanks for telling us a little bit more about how this problem happens and trying to help us keep out of the way of danger. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dave Benjamin is the executive director of Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project based in Chicago.